Welcome to the Behavioral Health Business Perspectives Podcast. I'm Bob Holly, Managing Editor of BHB, your go-to source of behavioral health industry news and insights. In this episode of Perspectives, I'm talking to Brian Holzer, the CEO of Aware Recovery Care, a company looking to shake up how and where addiction treatment services are provided in the U.S. Founded in 2011, Aware Recovery Care offers an in-home addiction treatment program across nearly a dozen states. The provider is coming off a $35 million Series B round two, which is going to fuel even more growth moving forward. I caught up with Brian to learn why Aware is so bullish on its in-home model and how that focus reflects broader healthcare trends. During the conversation, Brian and I also talked about his post-acute care background, what the behavioral health industry can learn from that space's evolution, the SUD payment landscape, and so much more. We're going to get into all of that in just a second. First, a quick message about the Behavioral Health Business Perspectives podcast. This is our brand new podcast from the BHB team where we bring you exclusive, candid conversations with some of behavioral health's biggest leaders and innovators. You can find all of our past and future podcasts on SoundCloud and Apple Podcasts. And if you're interested in learning more or even discussing sponsorship opportunities, reach out at podcast@bhbusiness.com. Now for my conversation with Aware Recovery Care CEO, Brian Holzer. Brian, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks, Bob. Appreciate you having me on.
All right. Well, you're going to do a better job introducing our listeners to Aware Recovery Care than I could. So I think to start, could you just explain the unique operating model, go over where Aware is currently operating, and maybe touch on some of the other key aspects of the business?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I've been CEO here for coming up on 14, 15 months, and it's been a privilege. This is an in-home addiction treatment company. So we are sending real people in a people-first, in-home-first care model. And it's actually a four-phase, up to 12-month in-home program. We're sending care teams into the homes for individuals suffering from addiction and essentially working with not only themselves, but their family and or allies to sort of repair the relationship, repair the home, and ultimately create a foundation for sustained recovery. Our outcomes are second to none. And again, as I said, I've been so privileged to join this company and essentially help it take it to the next level.
Yeah, and that's actually going to be my next question. You joined in April 2022, and you have an extensive background in the post-acute care space. What were the main factors that made Aware a place you really wanted to be, and what opportunities did you see to really take it to the next level?
Yeah, I've been dedicated to the home and community service space for almost 10 years. I worked for a large Blue Cross Blue Shield plan before coming here that owned a health system and had an opportunity to sort of build out some of their in-home delivery assets, home health, hospice, infusion, durable medical equipment, and then sort of worked to create a company that was oriented towards helping health plans maximize cost and quality in the post-acute care space. So really for 10 years, my passion has been to identify care that historically has been delivered in facilities that really could and should be delivered in the home or community space and work to sort of create new care models around that transition to allow care to be delivered in the home. When Aware was first pitched to me, and even 14, 15 months later, I still don't see this as an addiction company. This is a company delivering an innovative, longitudinal, in-home care model that treats a disease as a chronic disease and sort of approaches that from the standpoint of providing whole person care over an extended period of time. It just so happens with regards to Aware that the at-risk population that we're treating are those suffering from addiction. So to me, this was just a natural continuation of all the work that I was doing on sort of post-hospital care. And I've seen such similarities between all the levels of care that are disjoint in the addiction space and how Aware is solving for that by stitching together those levels of care to create a continuous care model to allow folks to sort of recover at their own pace over an extended period of time.
Yeah. You have a lot of really interesting stops in your career background. You served as president of innovations at Kindred Healthcare. You founded Lacuna Health. They provide patient engagement solutions to physician groups, hospitals, insurance providers. You previously with Highmark Health. How How did all of those experiences also shape who you are as a leader, and how are they going to serve you today with Aware?
I actually started my career as a physician, medical school graduate, did a year of residency, ultimately went the route of getting an MBA, spent the first part of my career in the biotech industry, working in sales, marketing, and strategy, mostly in the oncology space. And then migrated, as you said, to Highmark Health about 10 years ago, where the opportunity to look in sort of the scenario of not just working on post-acute, which has evolved so much in the last 10 years, but seeing it from the lens of being able to develop, sort of launch and run post-acute care service assets on the health system side, and then seeing how these assets integrated with health system and all of that within the confines of a large insurance company. So the concept of clinical transformation with associated payment redesign was something that I had a chance to sort of see all at once in my experience working for a large payer that owned a health system. And like anything else in your career, you sort of take tidbits of wisdom over the years from various roles you've had. But it's really all culminated with Aware. I mean, we actually have 16 value sort of bundled payment, quote unquote, value-based agreements with insurance providers. And that has allowed for the company to grow at the rate it's grown over the years. We receive a monthly bundle rate for our services, and we're delivering a clinically transformative care model, working sort of within the confines of what has been a fairly traditional facility-based and sort of outpatient level of care here in addiction. And so it's all sort of come together where I've been able to work at Aware with a clinically transformative care model, and also inherited and continue to grow more of these transformative payment arrangements with commercial insurers to allow us to deliver this innovative care and have it supported by a payment model that allows for the care to be delivered the right way.
I want to really dig into Aware in just a second, but before we do that, I want to circle back to something that you just said about the post-acute care space undergoing a huge evolution. Among my duties, I also help run home healthcare news and hospice news.
Yes.
And of course, we have our sister publications, Skilled Nursing News. So we've seen a lot of that change too. And whether we're talking about, setting of care shifts, rising acuity levels, more managed care, value-based care models, there really has been massive change. Do you see parallels between that evolution and where behavioral health, particularly SUD, although I know you described Aware as more than just an addiction treatment provider, do you see parallels between that and where behavioral health is headed?
I do. It's sort of eerily similar. And I, if I were a betting man, I would say that mental health and substance use disorder is going to undergo the same type of transformation that we've seen with some of the traditional post-acute care assets like home health care. When I started working on post-acute about 10 years ago, home health was not necessarily recognized as an important strategic service for health systems, but certainly insurance companies. And if you fast forward 10 years, you're seeing a lot of vertical integration where hospitals are forming joint ventures with home health companies, outright acquiring or starting their own home health companies. And then you're seeing obviously a run on insurance companies flat out acquiring home health companies to control for the quality and cost of that care delivered, and as it being recognized as an important extension of facility-based care. And what ailed post-acute and still does is if someone's discharged from the hospital, they may be touched by 3, 4, or even 5 different companies delivering fee-for-service services disconnected from each other. And namely, if someone goes home and receives nursing for home health care, nurse or therapist's work, they might also need infusion services for medication or TPN. They might need medical equipment. As they get towards more acuity, they might need palliative care services. Typically, those are all delivered by disjointed, disconnected levels of care. And when I transitioned over to behavioral health, for which I've never worked in the space before, I saw the same thing, where you had all these levels of care from residential treatment facilities to partial hospitalization to intensive outpatient to outpatient. And ultimately, those services aren't necessarily connected. So someone going through at their pace a journey towards recovery is left to navigate the various levels of service that they may need without really any of the integrated care management or transitions of care support to ensure that they're at the right level of care at the right time. And that's the innovation with Aware. It was essentially constructed by our founders to stitch together those levels of care to allow someone to essentially start at an ASAM level of about a 3.1 on the high end or a 2.1 on the low end. And for your listeners that aren't familiar with ASAM scoring score, that essentially allows someone at a lower level, a lower acuity residential level of care to sort of enter our program and progress through the levels either up or down during the recovery journey and ultimately end our program essentially at a level of needing outpatient services from that point forward. That stitching together levels of care is something I still don't see happening in post-acute, and I don't see happening anywhere other than in Aware with regards to behavioral health and substance use disorder treatment.
Yeah. And for the record, I totally agree that we're starting to see those parallels between post-acute and behavioral too, and particularly on the payer vertical integration side. I mean, we had Humana acquire Kindred at Home. Now that's become its CenterWell arm. Optum yes. Obviously acquired LHC Group, and now it's in the process of acquiring Amedisys. Optum has also acquired some pretty big mental health assets too. You know, Refresh is an example of that. So those parallels are definitely already underway. Shifting back to Aware, though, you know, it wasn't too long ago that Aware had a relatively smaller footprint. You know, company size wasn't huge, but last I looked, you're in 11 states now, I think upwards of 800, 900 employees, something like that. What's driven that growth in your view?
Well, it went back to, we were actually a one state company in 2016 with 50 employees and 100 clients, all served through a fee-for-service model that the founders had set up. And I alluded to this bundled payment construct. It was a relationship with Anthem of Connecticut back in 2016, where they had negotiated a bundled payment arrangement. So you take a scenario in which over a calendar year, clients are being asked to pay repeated copays and sort of fee-for-service services being provided over an extended period of time, shifting to a monthly bundle where we receive one monthly payment to deliver the totality of our services. And subsequently for the client, that results in them having to pay one copay once a month. That changed the course of the company. It allowed us to begin to scale and not necessarily overly customize, but certainly under the confines of a bundle, make sure that we're delivering the right amount of services at the right time, sort of aligned to whatever the client's needs are in that given that period of their recovery journey. That changed the course of the company. And so the company went from one state to four, and then through COVID went through from four states to nine. I joined, and we've since launched two new states in Kentucky and Georgia to where we are today with 11 states. So you look over a 7-year period, we've gone from one state, 50 employees and 100 clients to 11 states, you know, 800 or 900 employees. And I think we've served something in the order of 7,500 admissions just in the last 3 years alone. We continue to think that the growth will accelerate further. Unfortunately, demand is only getting worse, particularly post-COVID with regards to alcohol use disorder. And we think there is a growing acceptance that care can be appropriately delivered in the home, whereas that is not something that has been available to folks going through recovery services for their addiction.
I imagine it's not something like you're flipping a switch in terms of the ease of going from fee-for-service to a bundled payment structure. What were some of the things that you had to do to make sure Aware was capable of doing that? What was kind of step one, two, three, so to speak?
Yeah, I wasn't here for a lot of that heavy lifting. To be honest, the conversion from a fee-for-service model to a bundled payment model is easier. Instead of dropping repeated claims with regards to the services being provided, we negotiate bundled payment arrangements for every insurer prior to entering the state. So we will not enter a state until those rates are set with regards to the bundle. Anthem. Now, Carillon has been the major supporter of this company over the years. We're now in 7 states under the Carillon footprint. And so once those bundle payments are negotiated, there's a code that we were able to build to reflect the service we provide in that given month. And it actually creates simplicity with regards to then us being able to deliver our services in the right way. Again, tailored to whatever the client's needs are at that given point in time, versus having to stay relatively programmatic to delivering, you know, sort of a fee-for-service arrangement.
Could you talk a little bit more about your growth goals for, say, the next 12 months or so? You're in 11 states now. You know, could we expect 15 states by the end of 2024?
I'm not sure. We've grown so fast with regards to the number of states. I think we're at a point in time where ultimately we want to invest in the states that we're in. We have essentially a footprint with 3 regions of Connecticut to Maine in the Northeast. We have Georgia and Florida in the Southeast, Virginia sort of in the middle. And then we've got a central region with 3 new states in Indiana, Ohio, and Kentucky. And so we think we've got a really good footprint with regards to serving 3 regions east of the Mississippi. And we think there's an opportunity to invest in sort of density of services. We're working on launching an MAT, medication-assisted treatment product, and a medically managed detox product. We have historically only provided MAT services for those going through our 12-month program. And we see a growing opportunity for us to be able to serve folks that are looking for MAT services separate from the 12-month program, and ultimately potentially even transitioning the 12-month program after medications have been provided. Our goal moving forward is essentially to expand the populations and products that we provide in our existing states. Ultimately, we will look at strategic opportunities to enter new states, but we're in 11 states. The demand is enormous, and we've barely scratched the surface in our ability to serve those in need in the states that we're in.
When you are at the point of geographic expansion again, you mentioned payer alignment really having to be one part of the puzzle there before you enter into a new state. I also would guess that staff availability is kind of a factor as far as how Aware could grow. And, you know, again, kind of just thinking back to some of the stories that we've published on Home Healthcare News, I wanted to ask, what kind of labor pool are you swimming in? Are you competing for the same kinds of workers as a home health or home care agency? Because I know there's very stiff competition as far as caregivers and clinicians that go into the home.
We have an extremely ambitious model. We have a combination of paraprofessionals and licensed professionals that are phasing in and out of the home over the course of the 12-month of the 12-month program. And so on the paraprofessional side, we've got peer coaches, and family education facilitators that will work directly with the family or allies in the home. The peer coach model is growing in popularity. We're seeing an increasing number of companies, and I think they're onto something. I think the ability to send individuals that with lived experience into the homes for those that are currently going through recovery is very powerful, and even more so than say a white coat going to the home. There is a trust that gets built nearly immediately when we're sending peer coaches into the home that essentially look, act, talk, and were like the client not too long ago. We've been very successful in hiring peer coaches. Clients that complete our program become great referral sources for peer coaches, and our existing employee base end up being great referral sources for our peer coaches. I suspect moving forward, there's going to be increased demand for peer coaches, and I look at that as a good thing, because there is no dedicated career track right now for peer coaches. And I think it's a really, really important part of the solution with regards to how we're going to approach serious mental illness and substance disorder treatment as an industry. On the licensed side, I say we would be competing with some of the other entities you mentioned with regards to nurses, social workers, nurse practitioners. I think we see, though, on our side, we attract folks that have a dedicated interest in substance use disorder and or mental health. And so we're not necessarily fishing out of the same pond, but it's a part of the pond that we're all sort of fishing into, and that folks that are dedicated to behavioral health and substance use disorder, nurses, social workers, and MPs, as I mentioned, yeah, there's a lot of competition for it, but ultimately, we think we offer something very powerful, which is flexible scheduling and the ability to sort of deliver the care in the homes and remotely as needed. And for many folks who are tired of working in sort of facility-based setting, this becomes a very attractive career option for themselves.
I'm going to pause here for just a second to plug the Behavioral Health Business Perspectives podcast. For all those who are listening right now, I'm speaking with the CEO of Aware Recovery Care, Brian Holzer. And Brian just mentioned the peer-based model, and that's the perfect time for me to note that the launch of the Perspectives podcast, we have two episodes that actually dropped at the same time. We're going to have this conversation and then also my conversation with Samer Malik, who is the CEO of Firsthand, a company that is all about that peer model. So if you wanted to learn a little bit more about what Brian just talked about, you could go ahead and check out that podcast episode as well. Brian, coming back to you and shifting gears a little bit here, there's so much M&A activity in behavioral health. A little bit less right now, but generally the past few years, there's been so much activity, more than any other subsector, I think, in healthcare. But a lot of that's been related to digital behavioral health or facility-based businesses. Is M&A an option for Aware, considering your unique home-based care model?
I don't think so. You know, certainly we would remain open to any conversations in that regard. What we do is so new and different and unique. It's really a de novo expansion model, because it's not like we can look at three or four other companies doing what we're doing and seek sort of an M&A roll up strategy. We've got a progression here from one state to 11, over the last 7 years. We're refining that playbook to get more and more efficient in expansion. And ultimately we run that playbook. And so it becomes almost entirely a de novo, expansion opportunity for us. There might be niche opportunities to think about acquisition of tech enablement solutions that would layer in nicely with what we're doing. We've had more on that line collaboration arrangements with many digital providers of point solutions in the addiction space. There's just no need from our standpoint to build or buy a lot of stuff that's already out there. It becomes more of a strategic partnership with regards to tech enablement. I think what you're going to see a lot on the M&A side is really the reverse, where someone might look at an Aware as a sort of a service line extension or bolt-on to traditional levels of care. This is exactly what happened in post-acute, where you essentially have facilities like hospitals partnering or buying home and community service-based assets. It would not surprise me if you see sort of a run on some of that in our space, where facilities or sort of intermediate levels of care look to extend their continuum, and the home and community space is going to be foreign to most of these entities. And I think you could see some consolidation and vertical integration of behavioral health, similar to what you have seen on the hospital post-acute payer side.
It's important to note to listeners too, that when we talk about Aware's growth, Aware recently raised a $35 million Series B. Brian, what did that influx of infusion of capital rather allow Aware to do? And do you have any plans for additional fundraising? I know it's been a slower period in terms of investment activity in 2023.
Yeah, I mean, the capital funding that was reported on was largely from a strategic investors and some debt facilities. And so it just allows us to continue funding our expansion. Expansion burns a lot of cash. As we go into new states, this is a labor intensive model, and it takes time to sort of, because we're the only ones out there selling and trying to recruit this to clients. It takes time to sort of, for the census to sort of catch up. And so, you know, capital is very important to continue serving our mission of expanding into more markets and reaching more clients. And ultimately, if we need more capital, we will seek it, but we feel very good about where we are in the 11 states that we're in, and the ability to begin sort of shifting to a density approach of additional populations like adolescents and additional products, as I mentioned before, like MAT and medically managed detox services. There's just so much more that we can do in the states that we're in. And I would even offer, I mean, because we're touching that client for such an extended period of time, we see ourselves as a very important resource and collaborator to primary care physicians, and also insurance companies looking for us to identify and proactively escalate gaps in care. whether it be just general medical related gaps in care or behavioral. And so, you know, we've got some really tight relationships with some very large commercial insurers, and I think it's going to lead to some really interesting discussions about what more can we do in the home to create sort of this whole person healthcare approach that is where everyone is very focused on.
We had the opportunity to chat a little bit before recording this actual podcast conversation, and value-based care was among the topics that we kind of just, you know, talked about. And, you know, Aware has made progress moving beyond the traditional fee-for-service model. Not a lot of providers have, relatively speaking. When we talk about value-based care, there's such a buzz. Do you think that, you know, that buzz is warranted, that there has been a ton of movement on the value-based care front? Because I asked this question because I know you have a little bit of an alternative view compared to some folks.
I don't think we're as far along as everyone likes to report on. You know, I think it's the North Star with where we're all headed for. And I admire all of the focus and acceleration of that focus over the years with regards to shifting from a fee-for-service to value-based arrangement. You know, look, value and risk-based models require deep collaboration between providers and payers. And those entities tend to speak different languages and have different access to different types of data. And ideally, in order to sort of reach a value or risk-based arrangement, you need to have some form of a integration or merger of that provider data with the way payers collect data with regards to total cost of care and claims impact to sort of guide towards how you hold each other accountable to improving on quality and cost, and are looking at the same metrics, defining the metrics the same ways, and then having sort of a unified approach to which data you're going to use to prove those outcomes. It's extremely complex. I love the fact that we're all focused on it as an industry. I tend to hear more sort of promise versus actual indicators of it. You know, I've seen a lot reported on qualitative measurements, self-reported measurements, and using those as anchors of value-based payments. Ultimately, what Aware has been able to do is over a period of almost 7 years in collaboration with a large commercial insurer, look at total cost of care and PMPM impacts. And we've been able to show dramatic reductions in 2-year total cost of care impacts on not just medical, but behavioral. This is the type of data that we think is going to accelerate our ability to stay out in front in the conversion of sort of a fee-for-service model to ultimately, you know, risk-based bundle payment arrangements with insurance companies, upside and downside. I think you're going to see that from Aware in the near future.
We only have a few minutes left here, so I want to start wrapping up the conversation. What are 2 to 3 trends, challenges, or opportunities that you see really defining behavioral health, and particularly your space, moving forward in the near term? And then as a follow-up to that, how about, you know, 1 or 2 trends, challenges, or and opportunities defining the space over the long haul?
Look, I think I'm new to this space, but I have seen, even in my time here, a destigmatizing of the space. You know, I hear a lot from folks that have been working the space for years that this just didn't get the focus that it needed to. Compared to, say, something like post-acute, just because of the stigma related to serious mental illness and substance use disorder treatment. I don't see that nearly as much as maybe even when I started a year and a half ago or so. And I think as folks continue to sort of raise awareness that this is extremely important, the connection between mental health and physical health is real, and you can do your best to control for utilization on the medical side. But if you've not controlled for the interaction with mental illness and substance use disorder, I think folks are realizing the importance of looking at the two together, or at least recognizing the importance of more resources and investments on the mental health side. So I think you're going to see that continue to contribute to more innovators entering the space, hospitals and payers recognizing the importance to create partnerships and investments. That is only going to help the entire segment. As I sort of alluded before, I also think you're going to see some vertical integration. I really do think you're going to see traditional residential treatment providers, PHPs, IOPs, look for extending their reach and being able to control for more of the continuum and sort of bleeding into the home community services space. There are many examples already where folks, their business model really is bricks and mortar, whether it be clinics or facilities that are starting to dip their toe in the water, how to create extensions into the home. I do think you're going to see some vertical integration as you saw in post-acute. And I think you're going to see folks try and sort of bridge the gap and create a bigger continuum so that it is easier for them to create partnerships with, say, hospitals and or primary care or payers. Those are the two big ones that I would make mention to. They've got many, many layers. And I just think the third is you're going to see more innovators in the space. I mean, you mentioned Sama and Firsthand. I have a lot of respect for what they're doing on the peer coach side. There are others, Eleanor, Wayspring, Groups Recover, to name a few. Everyone's sort of chasing sort of the same goal here, is to create platforms for innovation with regards to how we're looking at serious mental illness and substance use disorder treatment, not just on the commercial side, but the Medicaid side. And look, more is better. There is such a huge demand and the scope of the problem is so unwieldy that it will take more innovators and providers doing this good work to ultimately move the dial forward. And I think the impacts to our healthcare system will be profound in the next couple of years.
That is the perfect note to end on. I've been speaking to Aware Recovery Care CEO, Brian Holzer. Brian, thanks again for your time. It's really been a pleasure speaking with you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on, Bob. You know, sort of as you alluded to, I go way back on the post-acute care side with my interactions with your company. And it's good to sort of get it from the other angle on the substance use disorder side. I have great respect for what you all do. And thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you might be one of the few executives that might have been quoted across our publications.
Well, I take pride in that.
That does it for this episode of the Behavioral Health Business Perspectives podcast. I'm Bob Holly with Aging Media Network, a WTWH media company. Thanks for listening.